Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
So, welcome everybody to our episode 5 of the EAN Cast Weekly Neurology on Sleep-Wake Disorders. My name is Thomas Berger. I'm head of the department here at the Medical University in Vienna, Austria, and I'm delighted to have a co-moderator, which is Ambra Stefani. She's a sleep-wake disorder specialist from the Medical University in Innsbruck. Welcome, Ambra. And it's an especially big pleasure to have today a guest, which is really one of the most honorable, specialized, and internationally well-known specialists in sleep-wake disorders, especially in narcolepsy, and therefore our episode is also termed Hot Topics in Narcolepsy. And for this occasion, I would like to welcome Professor Claudio Passetti. Hello, Claudio. If somebody is still there who doesn't know, Professor Passetti is the current president of the European Academy of Neurology, and he's chair of the Department of the Neurology at the so-called Inselspital in Bern. By the way, you also serve as the dean of the medical faculty in Bern, and but this is the most important information for today. You made some dramatic, important, and well-recognized and seminal scientific work to narcolepsy. And therefore, we are digging right now into details of narcolepsy. And as I am the plain, or let's say blank, neurologist here in the field, I will start with a very easy question for you, Claudio. Just recently, both of us, together with a third colleague, we were discussing whether narcolepsy is a rare disease or not. Is narcolepsy now a rare disease?
Well, again, thank you very much for having me today. And I'm very pleased to have you, Ambra, and you, Thomas, being, so to say, the interviewers. We like to say, based on few epidemiological studies, mainly from the Northern American continent, but some of them also from Europe, we like to say and to think that narcolepsy is a rare disorder. Now, one definition of rare disorder corresponds to a frequency of 1 out of 2,000 in the general population. This is what is usually written in review papers and books about the current frequency of narcolepsy. Now, the problem is that there is a minor form of narcolepsy, a not so severe form of narcolepsy, which we call narcolepsy without cataplexy, which we have been believing for many, many decades to be actually less common than the full-blown severe form of narcolepsy, narcolepsy with cataplexy, or for the specialist, narcolepsy type 1. However, several studies in the last, I would say, 10, 15 years have challenged this idea that narcolepsy without cataplexy, the minor form of narcolepsy, is actually rare. There are data from the general population showing, on one hand, that excessive daytime sleepiness may be found in 15-20% of the general population. Cataplexy-like episodes, cataplexy is a main symptom of narcolepsy, may be found in one up to, in a Brazilian study, 10% of the general population. And then the one of the major biomarkers of narcolepsy, sleep onset REM episodes, the early appearance of REM sleep when patients are asked to fall asleep, may be present in 6 to 15% of the general population. So there is a big question. Is narcolepsy really rare, or we are just missing the minor developing form of narcolepsy? And I see here, and I know, Thomas, obviously, that you are an MS specialist. I see a little bit an equivalent to the developing MS. You know, are we missing, the developing narcolepsy, or we should stick with the traditional concept that narcolepsy with cataplexy, the full-blown picture, is the major form of narcolepsy?
Before digging into details, and this will be I think, rigorously asked and questioned by Ambra. Let's ask me one question. So if I'm not a sleep-wake disorder specialist, is it likely that I missed the diagnosis of narcolepsy in my professional career? Or let's say in another way, how easy or how difficult is it to diagnose narcolepsy?
Well, I am pretty sure, knowing you, that you did not miss one. You're an excellent neurologist, an academic neurologist. But what we know from European studies, we have a very nice network of specialists, narcolepsy specialists in Europe. We have been working together for the last 14 years. Well, it turns out that one, the diagnostic delay is still today in Europe around 8 to 10 years. So in general, there is a big delay, which has certainly to do with another recognition or a lack or a, I would say, reduced awareness of the disease. And then we have a second worrisome data set, again, from studies from North America and Europe, that show that if you look into the diagnosis of narcolepsy type 2, the minor form, the less well-defined form, the less severe form of narcolepsy, if you look after 5 years, up to one-third of the patients change the diagnosis. So we have two problems. We don't recognize always the full-blown picture of narcolepsy, and we have particular difficulties in recognizing the minor form of narcolepsy, and this also calls for the need of new biomarkers of narcolepsy.
So I would like to hand over now to Ambra and ask you, Ambra, to ask Professor Bassetti, or even challenge him with your more detailed and specialized questions. Please.
Yes, thank you, first of all, for these first insights into narcolepsy and the open issues and the current problems also in the diagnosis. We heard already about the diagnosis of narcolepsy in episode 3. And now I would like to move more to the real hot topics. So is there any new biomarker of narcolepsy?
Thank you. Very intriguing, very important question. Well, just to remind everybody that is listening, we do have three good biomarkers of narcolepsy: sleep onset REM episodes, the reduction of the peptide hypocretin in the cerebrospinal fluid, and then we have the HLA DQB0602 positivity in the blood. Now, as I mentioned, we need further biomarkers, particularly for the minor form of narcolepsy. And there are three lines of discoveries. One is the use of functional and morphological neuroimaging. There is a big effort in looking for analysis of MR images to see if we can recognize, some signatures of narcolepsy and its borderland in this analysis. A second major line of effort or of studies relates to the topic of omics. So we start seeing first studies on microbiome changes, metabolome changes, and soon, hopefully, also proteomics and peptidomic changes in narcolepsy and its borderland. I would like to mention here a big study that we are performing currently in Switzerland, the Sphinx, where we're looking specifically for a new omic signature of narcolepsy in its borderland. And the third one is really to look into the data without an a priori hypothesis through deep learning approaches. The data science approach has been heralding recently also through work done within the European Narcolepsy Network, has been heralding new ways of analyzing old data or traditional data. And these are the three lines of biomarkers that may turn out to be of interest in the near future.
So there is a lot of research going on this topic. And this is great. And what about the etiology of the disease? Because we know, of course, that there is an hypocretin deficiency in the CSF in patients with narcolepsy type 1. And it has been discussed or hypothesized for many years that narcolepsy is an autoimmune disease. So is narcolepsy really due to an immune-mediated loss of hypocretin neurons?
Well, it is now 40 years that Honda in Japan first reported the very tight association, as you mentioned, of the HLS system with narcolepsy, suggesting the hypothesis of an immune-mediated, if not even of an autoimmune disorder. Now, our group 4 years ago gave a seminal contribution in describing for the first time the presence of autoreactive CD4 positive T cells in patients with narcolepsy. Interesting enough, in both the blood and also the CSF, and I would say again, interesting enough, not only in patients with a full-blown picture of narcolepsy type 1 with cataplexy, but also with a minor form of narcolepsy without cataplexy, narcolepsy type 2. Now, this observation is not the proof that these cells are really killing or are involved in the killing of the hypocretin neurons. We know that, by the way, that the CD4 are not killer T cells, but obviously suggest an involvement of the T cells in the process that leads to a loss of the hypocretin signaling in the brain of these patients. And in fact, the presence of specific autoreactive T cells has been shown also by other groups in the world. Now, at that time, we were quite, convinced that narcolepsy is eventually an immune-mediated disorder leading to an hypocretin deficiency. Now, unfortunately, the picture seems to be a little bit more complicated. Since the beginning of the new century, but more recently, further data questioned the idea that narcolepsy is a pure hypocretin deficiency syndrome. Why? Because it has been shown that some transmitter system, I'm alluding particularly to the histaminergic system, may be upregulated. There are experimental and autoptic data showing that the histaminergic neurons may be increased in the brain of narcoleptics or in the brains of animals with narcolepsy models. And on the other side, we have a very recent paper from this year from our Dutch colleagues, showing that also another transmitter system, the corticotropin-releasing hormone neuronal system, is also decreased. So this is one first kind of puzzling series of data suggesting that narcolepsy, as many other disorders of the nervous system, may not be related to a dysfunction of only one neuronal system. There is a second observation, which is also increasing, and that is that maybe the hypocretin neurons are not completely lost. There have been data published by North American researchers showing that treatment with opiates given for under indication may lead to an increase in the number of hypocretin neurons, observation number one. And second, that animal data showing that there may be also ways to silence the hypocretin neurons leading to a reduction of the hypocretin transmission without killing the neurons. And the big question is now whether this is a methylation mechanism that may be triggered by immune cells or immune influences, but not leading eventually to a loss of hypocretin neurons. In fact, we know for many years, and we were the first or among the first to point out, that you may have narcolepsy even without hypocretin deficiency, even in humans, few cases, familial cases, twin cases, and for instance, after traumatic brain injury, you may have hypocretin deficiency as measured in the CSF without a narcoleptic phenotype. So unfortunately, as often in medicine, the equation, the simple equation, narcolepsy equal hypocretin deficiency, probably due to an immune modulated loss of neurons, is now currently challenged. Maybe narcolepsy is not just hypocretin related, and maybe the hypocretin deficiency is not related to a loss, as this was suggested by few autoptic studies.
Claudio, may I ask a surprise question in
Please.
Between? With the fact that I'm a neuroimmunologist and with your alluding about the autoimmune or potential autoimmune also pathogenesis, what about the fact that narcolepsy is also part of the NMO spectrum disorder syndrome or symptom on the one hand? Or the other question would be, is narcolepsy also potentially a part of an autoimmune encephalitis syndrome, like in the IGLON 5 autoimmune encephalitis?
Yes, yes. Thank you for this very important question. I come maybe to one traditional statement of the narcoleptologists for decades. Narcolepsy is exceptionally accompanied by autoimmune disorder. So this was one of the reasons, including the difficulty in actually triggering narcolepsy in human, in animal models through human, you know, CSF or other materials, that led actually people to wonder whether the autoimmune hypothesis was a good one in narcolepsy. Now, as you point out, recent years have shown that yes, narcolepsy can indeed be associated with autoimmune disorders. You mentioned the NMO disease spectrum. You mentioned the IGLON 5 autoimmune disorder. I would like to add that there are also cases, rare cases of Antima2 related narcolepsy. There are cases associated with Rasmussen's encephalitis. And we have published a few years ago with Professor Kalweit a small but important series of a coexistence of multiple sclerosis with narcolepsy, in which the two diseases may follow each other. Now, this can be coincidence, but I would like to say that you're right. The coincidence and the observation of this association suggest a more, I would say, intrinsic connection between narcolepsy and these disorders and not just a coincidence. Now, the question is really, what does this tell us for idiopathic narcolepsy? This remains open. But most of us, despite the fact that it's very difficult to demonstrate an autoimmune mechanism, do think that the immune system is involved in the pathogenesis of narcolepsy, but the exact mechanism remains to be elucidated.
Thank you, Claudio. One related question, as we were thinking or discussing about the advances in the understanding of the underlying pathophysiological mechanisms, this improved knowledge could also help improving treatment. So we know that, of course, there are already treatment for narcolepsy. Is this enough? Is this satisfactory? What is available till now? Or through this improved knowledge, would it be possible also to improve the treatment of patients with narcolepsy?
A fundamental question. So I would like to state first that there was a major improvement in our treatment, armamentarium, in our treatment possibilities for narcolepsy. In the last 20 years, there have been multiple randomized control trials in sleep medicine, testing and proving the efficacy of several medications in adults and just in the last few months, also in children with narcolepsy. I like to mention, as president of the European Academy of Neurology, that we just published 1 year ago a nice European guideline on treatment of narcolepsy in adults and children, in which we reviewed actually the literature available, and we could actually suggest with strong evidence four medication for the treatment of excessive daytime sleepiness and at least two medication for the treatment of cataplexy in adults. Now, on one side, good news, we do have well-tested drugs for the treatment of the main symptoms of narcolepsy, excessive daytime sleepiness, cataplexy. Now I come a little bit with the bad news or with the need for further studies. First, we know from few studies that the compliance of patients with narcolepsy for treatment is not very high. Maybe 50, maybe 60, maybe 70% in good centers, but it's still not as high as one would wish. Second, the study of treatment of narcolepsy has been focused for until now, I should say, on, I would say, outcomes of treatment that are not always very relevant for the patient. I'm sorry to say that the patients have not been asked to define you know, the outcome measures that should be tested, the so-called patient-related outcomes, and also the functional outcome in terms of driving, in terms of capacity of working, was not, you know, tested or not included in the studies that I was alluding before. So there is a need for better assessments of outcome of treatment in narcolepsy. And last but not least, narcoleptic patients suffer quite often of comorbidities, obesity, depression, associated sleep disorders. And until now, there are no studies on treatment options and treatment possibilities for the comorbidities of patients of narcolepsy. I would like to say that there are also new ways of treatment that may become very important for the near future. One is the potential usefulness of substitutive drugs. So hypocretin is diminished or lost. Maybe there is a silencing that we need to understand better, but until now we believe there is a loss of hypocretin transmission, irreversible loss, and there are new drugs that are now being developed that may substitute this loss with orexin agonist. And now I see here the comparison with the insulin treatment of patients with diabetes who lost insulin because of an autoimmune attack. And then there is still the big question, is this an immune-mediated disease? Do we have any options with immunomodulatory drugs? Or if this is indeed a silencing, is there a possibility to reverse the silencing? I mentioned the opiates, which is obviously not what we would like to suggest for the future treatment of narcoleptic. But maybe there are other drugs that may, stop the silencing of drugs. And maybe one of the ideas that I mentioned is that the silencing may be related to methylation mechanism. And there are drugs that may reverse the methylation of in narcolepsy. And so I do see a need for and the chance of new treatment approaches and evaluations for patients with narcolepsy.
Thank you. So these are really hot topics in narcolepsy. There is a lot going on in the research field. And thank you, Claudio, for providing us this update.
Thank you very much.
May I finalize with one question, as you are the president of the European Academy of Neurology, with regard to what you told us about the studies in narcolepsy, what do you feel or what do you see or what do you urge as an improvement in a kind of European cross-border study setting or format in narcolepsy?
Thank you. This is a very important question. I think that the creation of European networks and as for narcolepsy, but there are even better examples, is actually the future for diagnostic and treatment approaches for rare disorders. This is one comment, which may be trivial, but I think it's important to be stressed. The second is that the European Academy of Neurology wants to support international collaborations around the topic of rare disorders, but in general. And for this, we are investing some energy and also some efforts to provide the correct frame for these collaborations. I would like to mention the big efforts around the analysis of neurological complication of COVID. You have been very pivotal, Thomas, with others in discussing the possibility of joining forces around data science approaches in Europe. So I think that the European Academy of Neurology should and will play a role in creating a framework and providing support for international collaborations also for diseases like narcolepsy.
So I think we have come to an end. I would like to thank Claudio Bassetti for your really deep insights and also for more or less showing the roadmap for the future research, but also not forgetting, as you, I think, importantly mentioned, the patient side and the involvement of our patients also to improve the better outcomes, be it any drug or any other intervention. So thank you once again. And I also would like to thank Dr. Ambra Stefani, tante grazie to Innsbruck for your also very challenging questions. And I wish that the auditorium also feels that this was very worth and valid to listen to our hot topics in narcolepsy.
Thank you, Ambra. Thank you, Thomas. It was a pleasure to be with you tonight, and keep going. Thank you. Arrivederci.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EANcast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.